Okay. Kind of gather back up here. Got a question, Ms. Tillman?
We never determined if we were, which draft we were taking on that one, the 50 or the 85. And I believe with if we leave it at 50, that would be also a technical bill. And I don't think there's, I'm supportive of going.
We do this, why don't we vote
to 85?
You what?
Not in
that bill as is, and if it does not pass,
we're going to 85.
Why don't we'll bring that back up to see if we want to do a technical bill with the 50? So we can include the technical with the 85 as well if the committee deems that passes.
That was 13? 13.
That was number 13.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to keep that as a separate bill and not.
I agree.
He's asking if we want to vote up or down on the 50 to 85 here before we go forward.
Right.
Okay,
right. So what we've got is we've got one technical bill that would include five bills, which we all agreed on. We then have eight more bills for a total of nine, which is, I didn't expect to get to that point, but I'm happy we did. Because it kind of takes it makes the ranking less significant. And the conversation I was having on the side actually was talking about how many bills we figured we could probably get through this next session. And we felt that as legislators, if we were to divvy those bills up, if we all vote on them, we'd be able to get those at least to committee for consideration. So the ranking so much isn't important anymore. So we would just take all nine of those bills. So we'll bypass the ranking, knowing that we're going to take up the nine bills. But what we need to do now is to vote on whether we want to have all nine bills move forward. Okay, and then you want to explain the voting process after we get to that point? Because there are members that are missing and we do need to do some other kinds of voting. I'm not
sure. The starting point for that is that the rules of the Ledge Council that that they instruct the chairs are is that the council committees are required to vote in person on their recommendations. The exception to that rule is that when there are things like combining multiple bills into a single bill, like we're doing at the technical bill, when there are possibly additional deliberations, we're able to send those bills that are voted on in the presence of the committee out for a final vote to by mail ballot, if desired, to the full committee membership for final confirmation to make sure that changes like combining these bills and that sort of thing, making any final amending tweaks and that sort of thing, have been properly memorialized by our work. So what we would do today would be to take roll call votes on these issues. We can take a roll call vote on the technical bill combining the five bill drafts, and then, as Senator Goodex has indicated, proceed with our essentially the committee's final vote on each of the bill drafts, subject to that mail ballot that will change these things from, in certain cases, change them from P1s to 1s, take out some of our notes, make sure that the questions that Melissa and I had in the drafting process all get properly answered by our second draft in what the committee's interest is. So I guess if we're looking to proceed, what I would recommend doing is starting with that technical one.
You're in charge.
And then moving down through the list to make sure that we're taking each one after that. It sounds like Senator Goodex is fine with taking each one of those after that in sequence. And that's when we can get to talking about various amendments and voting on those. We can talk about combining various bills and so on. So I guess the first the first motion that I, as I understand, you're interested in would be to move to recommend drafts 35, 36, 40, 44, and 12 to be advanced and combined into a single bill under the technical framework.
Okay, do we have a motion to combine those five bills into one?
So moved.
Second.
So moved, second. Questions? Okay, we'll take roll. Well, sorry, go ahead, I didn't see your hand up.
Do we want to just add in that DOR calculation now to the technical bill, or no?
No.
Okay.
We would add that after, pending the outcome of the other bill. We have a motion to second. No questions, take roll.
Senator Goodix?
Aye.
Representative Lautenbeck?
Aye.
Senator Jelk? Representative Kuglich?
Aye.
Representative Onstad?
Aye.
Representative Zepnik?
Aye.
Ms. Andrews?
Aye.
Mr. Harrigan?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Mr. Kovari? Mr. Lincoln? Mr. Rasmussen?
Aye.
Mr. Reichel? Mr. Sirk? Mr. Slavish? Mr. Thillman?
Aye.
Mr. Wilson? Mr. Wortman?
Aye.
Okay, passes.
The 12 ayes, no zero, no noes.
Next one is 18 and 37, right?
Yep.
So the next bills we have before us are the combination of 0018 and 0037, which we agreed that we would combine. So I'm looking for a motion to...
I think we might have some questions resolved.
Got any questions?
Are there questions in that draft relating to...
Hang on.
Well, I guess are we moving to... is the motion just to combine them so that we can discuss the merits of them later, or is the motion just... Is to basically vote on the merits as well? Because I do have a number of drafting questions in particular on this 18.
You want to take the motion to combine? Make a cleaner one. All right, why don't we take a motion to combine first and then we'll have discussion. Motion to combine 0018 and 0037. So move. Second? Okay, we have a second. So we'll take we can just take a vote. Ayes and nays. So all in favor of combining, say aye.
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 Those opposed? Okay. So now I'll open up 18 and 37 for discussion.
Okay, so...
Mr. Harrigan, you want to go first?
With regard to 18, on page 2, under the draft explanation and then in the text itself, there's references to the dates by which reports need to be filed. And consistently through the documentation, the May 1st date is used. That, I think, is a practical problem for most municipalities because it's probably the exception rather than the norm that communities have their audits even completed by May 1st. I think the earliest that would be a date for a date that is achievable would probably be July 31st, would be my thought, or after. But I don't know that the date by which you report is that critical, at least from the standpoint of the Joint Review Board. I think that as long as they're getting it within that calendar year and have the opportunity to meet and debate and deliberate on it, that would meet the intent here. But you got to, I think, give the communities, particularly the smaller communities, that don't have the resources to get this quickly, time to put this stuff together. So I'd recommend that be changed to July 31.
So are you suggesting that it's on July 31 or no later than July 31? What if a community can have theirs done by May 15th?
Yeah, well, sooner the better.
Okay.
Sure. The other thing that I wanted to suggest here is the language on page 8, it says 6M starts at the bottom of 7 on top of 8. It says, on the bottom of 7, it says, the Standing Joint Review Board shall meet annually on May 1st or as soon as the updated annual report describing the status of each existing tax increment district become available to review the effectiveness and status of each tax incremental financing district. I just think that a better word than effectiveness would be performance. because, you know, effectiveness can create an expectation that I think is subject to a lot of interpretation. Performance, I think, still gets the same concept and gives the community an understanding that they're going to be asked to show whether this thing, really what you're asking them to do is to compare to what you said you were going to do in your project plan, and where are you with regard to that? And so I think that that's a performance question.
One of my questions in following up with that was, so if you look on your 18/P2 draft on page 8, there's a comment that I made, and I have a number of questions, because I'm not quite sure what the purpose is, what the results of the GIB's finding should be. You know, is there any consequence if they find, if they have a concern or they have a negative finding? I'm not even sure. Right now they don't have to prepare any written document. I don't know if the committee wants them to do that, but I mean, I would think that would be something that we should clarify in statutes if the JRB is supposed to do something other than just meet and review these reports.
In my mind, I don't know that there needs to be a mandatory action item emanating from GRB's review. There can be, and there can be recommendations, but to require a written finding annually, I think, is a little bit onerous.
Okay.
I think I'd rather leave that up to the locals. I think the point we're trying to make is that there needs to be a meeting, and there needs to be the information given to those members at that meeting. If they want to have somebody present that information to them formally, that's up to them. If they have questions and concerns regarding that, I think that's an internal local thing that they resolve their issue. But I think the point we're trying to make is that we want to have accountability down to that level so that when citizens have concerns, they know who to go to and who has the information. So I think what happens after that is probably more a local decision.
Right. And frankly, I see most of these communities, some of these communities are actually doing some of this already, and they see it as an opportunity to establish a rapport with this body so that when they do come in
sure.
for something in the future,
build trust.
They got some trust.
Did you have a question?
I had a quick question, and that is, just so I understand it, 18 would require for any new TIF or amended TIF that there be the standing joint review board created, but a community that doesn't do that, that has an existing one, wouldn't have to create the standing one, but all communities, whether they're amending it or creating one, would, if they have a TIF, be required to do the annual report. Is that correct? But they would only send it to the overlying, like we do now, to the overlying taxing jurisdictions and DOR, but it wouldn't be the presenting to standing board, because if you didn't have one, okay, I just wanted to clarify.
Mr. Roman, do you have a question?
Well, I thought this was requiring a annual meeting of the Joint Review Board for all TIF districts. And
it's requiring, maybe I misread or misheard your question. It's requiring, if you have a TID, you have to have a standing Joint Review Board under the bill draft.
That's what I...
That's permanent. So that, because otherwise I don't know how, like who would they submit the reports to and require a meeting? I could draft it differently if you don't want to stay in a review board, but I don't know how the reporting would work. Like, who would they submit it to?
Just one comment on that. For communities that have multiple joint review boards that are standing due to different jurisdictions, I'd like that there only have to be one meeting where all of the representatives of all the joint review boards can meet and they can go over the findings of all the report.
Cal?
Yeah, getting back to the purpose of the Joint Review Board, though, I mean, we're just presenting them with information. And that information, that is the facts. And you're not asking them to approve it or take any action.
Right.
I don't think that would really make sense. But you're just presenting it. They receive the information. They have it. That's the purpose of the meeting.
That's what I understand it to be.
I have two things. So just to clarify, on the bottom of page 7, lines 5, on line 5, it would, the same thing, it would be no later than the July 31st again?
Correct.
Okay. And then in response to Peter's comment, Is there anything in the draft that would preclude them from having, like, a joint review board meeting, like having one big
joint review?
It's not expressly stated, but I guess if we put it in the statutes, then it could put municipalities on notice that this is allowable. Because I'm assuming that maybe sometimes the municipalities might not think, you know, that might take some creative, you know, one step ahead type of a thought process. And if you have it in the statutes, it just puts everybody on notice that this is an option. But there's nothing specifically in the draft that precludes it.
Because I understand the point that there's no reason to have multiple. You could just notice it once and have it.
Did you have something, Mike?
I just want to make an observation. I know that we received a letter from Kenosha County here in the packet. And it seems as though the thrust of the letter is along the lines that this bill is attempting to address, although I think what they've suggested would go further. I think that this is a good start on what's been proposed here. And the question comes into play, and I'm reminded by some of the suggestions that are in the letter here. This would put more teeth into the JRB authority. Today, if there's an issue with something that a joint review board member representing their taxing jurisdiction, if there's an issue that one of those entities sees with a tax increment district that varies from what either A, they feel is provided for under the law, or B, is inconsistent with what they were told they were going to be doing with the project plan, then the remedies are legal at this point in time, I believe. And the problem is that I don't think until we had good reporting, they knew whether or not they had a basis for any actionable item. This gives them perhaps the opportunity to take action if they feel that there is a basis for it. And so I do think that by taking this, this step, this creates an opportunity. Now, nobody's suggesting anybody go to court, but at least, you know, there's an opportunity to raise concern, if there is one, more specifically. And some of these other suggestions, I don't know if this is something that anybody has an interest in going through any of this, but as long as we're on this point, I just wanted to raise it.
There was one other concern that DOR had, and I'll have Melissa kind of speak to that.
So, it came to my attention, DOR has concerns about being required to post these electronic documents on their website. And so there's been a suggestion, I think, that the chair suggested to me to basically pull out the components related to having the municipality post on DOR's website and instead having the municipality post the reports on their own municipal website. And if we do take out the DOR reporting component, also it's suggested to take out all the auditing, penalty requirements for a municipality that fails to meet the deadline for posting on DOR's website.
DOR's concern was that they, and if they're here, speak if I speak wrong, but DOR's concern was that they would almost have to create a whole other subset within DOR to take care of this requirement that we're asking them to take care of, and they felt that, and so do I, that the municipalities, the locals, should be able to post on their own websites. They're violating law if they don't do what's required from the statute. And one of the penalties that we could enforce in this legislation is that if you fail to have the joint review meeting, that you are no longer created to, or no longer allowed to create a TID until you comply with the law. So just some thoughts.
Along those lines, if you look on the last page of the draft, page 10, I had a number of comments. And Illinois, they have a penalty structure, which is, I think, different than what we do in the statutes related to municipal law. They actually fine $5 a day for first days that a municipal or municipalities not in compliance, and then the fee goes up to $10 per day. We don't necessarily do that. I couldn't find any place in the statutes where we do that to a municipality. Instead, what we've done, for example, is waiting to allocate value increments until a municipality submits the annual report, or imposing a penalty upon a municipality, such as reducing county and municipal aids. So there are some options. If we want to make sure that municipalities are submitting these reports to the JRB and that they're posting them on their website instead of DOR, there are some ways that we could, I guess, have a little carrot, you know, to make sure that municipalities are doing that.
I'm going to go back to the first meeting that we had, and I'll speak for Professor Kovar, who's not here. Right now, one of the issues with TIF that we have is the ability to get comprehensive reporting statewide, and I thought that the initial draft was to achieve that comprehensive reporting for purposes where you can, you know, review on a statewide basis the performance of TIF. I understand revenue's concern, but I think that was the original intent of the bill, was so that it can be studied.
Thank you. Any other concerns with that, or any other, Mr. Werman?
Well, I like the idea of a central reporting depository for this. And then if you don't file the reports with the Department of Revenue, how is that any different than somebody not just checking a box that they actually had that joint review board meeting? I guess it's another step to ensure that we're complying.
One idea might be, instead of the $5, instead of the penalties, but as you mentioned, maybe even a little stronger than not allowing a new TIF, but allowing, you know, there are no modifications, no, you know, there's no ability to...
You're frozen?
To you know, do a decrement or, you know, any distress. I mean, you have to be in compliance in order to make any changes to your project plan. That might be at least some encouragement.
And that would be in the spirit of going through DOR?
Just to make sure the annual reporting is done. So that part about the, so if you don't file your annual report, your penalty could just be that then you're not allowed to take advantage of any of the remedies that are available to you, or do you think a fine is easier?
No, I think, well, we've done it in other places in the state. I'm trying to figure out how I would draft that, and that's my concern, is what would it look like, and would it be confusing to municipalities, because there would be a number of cross-references where I'd have to amend. But if we were to do something which is done in other places of the statutes, where we just say that, you know, for example, DOR can't allocate a tax increment, that looks easier, and I think it puts municipalities on notice.
I brought the concern up for DOR. Does everybody agree that we should keep DOR in the process, or pull them out? Go ahead.
On that note, I agree with Peter, and I know Professor Kovar, you know, talking about one place to go for academia. I mean, there's always the, you know, once we know what the, you know, the fiscal estimate might look like from a legislative standpoint, maybe we can be convinced. But we could also ask for it to go on open book or something else. I mean, transparency is part of,
correct,
you know, our, I think, moving forward, kind of some, there might be some other options besides giving the onus to them. So I say leave it in for now.
Okay. Is it the consensus of the committee is to leave DOR in the process? Raise your hand if you agree. Okay, we're going to leave DOR in the process. We'll have to take a look at the fiscal.
I was going to say, if we could get a fiscal, I think we could make it.
Right.
We can fix it.
I think that's going to happen at the committee level.
Okay, got it.
Right.
Do you want to, regarding the auditing component, if a municipality is not in compliance and hasn't filed an extension, do you want that to be part of, I guess, a penalty, really, for a municipality? Or do you want to do something where they just...
Well,
you know,
if I can offer a suggestion. I mean, the DOR isn't going to be able to do an audit. There's no way. We aren't staffed for that. You're going to have to have an entirely different infrastructure there if you're going to do that kind of thing.
Right.
And all these other states that are doing this have that. So if that's what you want, that's a whole other discussion. But if you want to have an audit, then it ought to be an audit that is paid for by the community. it would seem to me, if you're going to impose that. Yeah. I mean, the DOR can order an audit, and then to the extent that it isn't paid by the community, it gets paid by deduction from state aid or whatever. But it seems to me that if there's auditing that you want to have, it ought to be done independently, and then maybe the DOR designates who they contract with to do that kind of stuff. But that's not something that the DOR itself, I think, is set up to do.
Go ahead.
The point of the audit was is punishment, is my understanding. I think Representative Ladenbach has a far stricter punishment, I believe, if you don't allow them, a community that's not in compliance can no longer take advantage of amendments, decrement situations, or new TIF plans. I think that would be a far greater deterrent and ensure that they would get their annual reports in on a regular basis. I'm not sure when the audit is done, they've just done an audit, and for what purpose is the audit materials going to be used for? Because they're once again in compliance right away.
I mean, we can do something like that. I know it's going to be administratively taxing to include all those possible scenarios that you would be shutting off. Would anybody be in favor of having a, I don't know, a sore number out there that would scare everybody, $100 a day penalty? I mean, there shouldn't be any reason why we can't get these reports done. I mean, there shouldn't be. Whether you're doing them in-house or having them done outside, if I contract for the work and I tell them I need the report by this date, I need to have it by this date.
Remembering a call that I did get from one of my communities, and this was like they turned in their road aid stuff 2 weeks late, and it was like $785, and then people then it does start adding up, and if it's like a clerk error or something. But yeah, I do think that there's I don't know what the best way is, but
what do you got, Hal? What do you think?
Well, if you don't file your reports by the due date, and then if you had filed an extension and you still don't get them, I think the penalty would be DOR doesn't certify an increment for the next year for that TIF district. I think that would be...
Is that a penalty? I mean, is that a pretty harsh penalty, do you think?
It's a very harsh penalty.
Yeah, but...
Well, that's
the hammer. That's the big hammer.
Then it gets done.
Then it gets done, right? Here we go. What do you got?
Well, I just have a suggestion. Maybe we should first talk about what all would be in this new reporting, because I think it's more than, you know, what is currently done, and that might help us say, you know, do we want to scale back a little bit on that? I mean, we're all for transparency too, but I was looking at some of the things that Illinois requires, and we may or may not want to do that. That might help us decide, and then what's the penalty
sure,
if they don't?
We'll talk about that.
So that's another question, actually, that I had. So the difference between the version you saw last time and this version are all the contents bottom of page 5, line 14, lines 14 through end of page 6. These are all items that are, suggested items to be put into the annual report. They're meant to be, like, you have to include these, but it doesn't mean the municipality could not include more. The municipality could include other things if they felt like they wanted to. Right now, we don't have any requirement as to what the content of these annual reports should have in there. Illinois goes into much greater detail as to what should be included in the report, but these were just a list of suggestions at the chair's direction of what should be included. I quite honestly have never really seen one of these reports, so I don't really know what this would mean to a municipality, if this would be a lot of work, or if this is already being done.
They'll let us know.
Well, I can tell you, our firm works in Illinois, and we provide this service in Illinois, and we get paid for doing that work in Illinois. And the costs associated with this to comply with the Illinois statute are not insignificant.
But then these aren't the Illinois
statutes. No. These things, I think, should be readily available.
Sure.
We'll just read them real quick.
Well, okay, sure. So if you're following along on page 5, the report needs to include the name of the assigned district. Sorry, the name assigned to the district. Sorry. The classification of the district that is included in the project plan's scope, the name of any developer of the land that is located within the TID, the date that the city expects the TID to terminate, the amount of tax increments to be deposited into the TID special fund, an analysis of the special fund for the district that includes all of the following, a balance in the special fund at the beginning of the year, all amounts deposited into the special fund by source, including all amounts received from other tax incremental districts, an itemized list of all expenditures from the special fund by category of permissible costs, and the balance of in the special fund at the end of the fiscal year, including a breakdown of that balance by source and a breakdown of that balance identifying any portion of the balance that is required, pledged, earmarked, or otherwise designated for payment of or securing of obligations and anticipated project costs. Any portion of such ending balance that has not been identified or is not identified as being required, pledged, earmarked, or otherwise designated for payment of or securing of obligations or anticipated project costs shall be designated as surplus. And then the last item, this to be in the report, is the contact information of the person designated by the city to respond to questions or concerns regarding the annual report.
I mean, basically, this is just a balance sheet. I mean, number six is the only substantive part of the whole reporting process, and that's just a simple balance sheet. What did you receive in? What did you pay out? I don't know. Am I making too little of this, Al?
Well, the way I would envision this working, when we close out a TIF district, we have an audit, but then we have to file a report with the Department of Revenue, and it lists all of the revenues and expenditures per your project plan, and then for each year, the revenues you took in and what your expenditures were, and then a cumulative for the whole TIF district.
Sure.
For this annual reporting, I would envision you list out those revenues and expenditures for your project plan, what you took in and spent by those categories each year, and then cumulative to date for the TIF.
So you're actually doing the work ahead of time for your closeout.
Yeah, but the DOR already has a form and format for that.
I guess my biggest concern was not the financial stuff. It was number three, the name of any developer of the land that is located within the tax increment financing district. I didn't know. I mean, we have lots of developers, lots of property owners. So would we list all the property owners in the TIF, or is that just for the projects for that year?
The request was to have the name of any developer. But the statutes do not define what a developer is, and they really only mention developers when you're talking about developer agreements.
Oh, okay.
So the concept of developers participating in a TID are not really discussed much in the statutes. So if you would like to either amend this language or clarify a little bit more about what we're talking about when we say developers, I think that would be something that would be helpful.
One suggestion might be, if you're going to leave that in, to require only listing the names of developers that have benefited from the TIF program. In other words, if you've got a developer that comes in and has requested no tax increment participation whatsoever, is that relevant to the information that you're really seeking here, or are you really trying to track the developers that have benefited in terms of the project plan expenditures?
May I suggest that we just put in all development agreements, that the parties involved in development agreements, because you can make the argument that you moved into that district, you benefited from all the infrastructure coming in. Granted, you didn't ask for a cash grant, but you benefited from that infrastructure.
Yeah.
So instead of...
That would be consistent with what I was
saying. So instead of on line three, item number three, instead of the name of any developer, have them just include copies of any development agreement, developer's agreement?
Or a listing of those involved in development agreements.
Yeah, not the actual agreement.
Okay.
Just parties involved in the development agreements with the city or the village.
Does that help you out? Okay, can we get back to Hal's point real quick? Does DOR already request this stuff?
Upon closeout. But I'm saying if we're saying we want an annual report, it could follow that same format.
Is that more cumbersome than what's being asked right now, or?
I think it's, some of those things I think there's interpretation as to what those mean, but I think it would be pretty clear as to what the format of this should be. You guys can work with the Department of Revenue to get that. But.
So you're in a city of 46,000. What if you were in a city of 5,000? Would it make a difference? I'm just asking.
I would do it the same way. I mean, it ought to be apparent. I mean, you have a project plan and what you plan to do there, and you ought to be able to put that in a report.
Go ahead.
This might be one of those dummy questions. I apologize, but I'm a little confused. I mean, can somebody give some examples of just exactly how often or common or let alone problematic it would be to furnish this kind of information? Because I'm kind of spun around here in terms of like...
You're thinking we'll already do that? Is that what you're thinking? It's already being done?
Yeah, but I'm also trying to figure out what's the problem with listing a developer that's within a TID, regardless of whether there's a development agreement. I'm having a hard time envisioning the nature of a TID, and I apologize in advance, but that has 60 developers in it. I mean, is that... Am I wrong, or...?
Somebody want to take a stab at that? Go ahead.
Huh?
Sure, well, answer your question.
We have hundreds of acres of land in our two TID districts, and there's lots of different property owners. We have a listing of all that because we have redevelopment districts, and we have, obviously, notice requirements, but those change, and I think Mr. Harrigan mentioned some developers that build in TIF districts don't request any TIF assistance. So should we list those or just the ones for that year that we've entered into a development agreement with or provided assistance to? I think it's a long list probably for us.
I understand your question and the issue you raise. What I'm not understanding is how or why it's problematic or onerous for you. I mean, when you say should you list them, I'm asking the question, Why does it matter to you? Is it that laborious or costly? I have a hard time believing that. I really do. But
sure.
Because you have to have other kinds of records of that person. I mean, if they say, for example, withdraw from any using any TIF money, I mean, somebody had to make an agreement there, right? A letter, or there's a letter of understanding, or there's something. And so it's to me, this is like, I'm just confused as to like why this is not in the computer age, something that you can just kind of hit a few buttons. But I'm, like I said, I profess naivety here.
My question is, should we include all the property owners then, if they're potential redevelopers or development? I mean, that's the question that I have.
Okay, fair enough.
And we can include them all, but does that...
What does it prove?
Yeah.
I think this is getting back to transparency, so that those that received taxpayers' dollars can be held accountable on it, whereas those that you want your scrutiny on that part of the deal, not necessarily on innocent bystanders.
Good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question, and I'm hoping some of our partners can answer this. The requirements or criteria that you are to fill out this report, I assume in the larger types of communities you have people that could do that, but in the smaller communities, our friend Mr. Harrigan mentioned that they do this service, and I'm just concerned, is this going to be a large cost, or is this information readily available for everybody?
I guess the question is, are these costs recoverable through the TIF?
I think they're administrative costs. They're clearly an eligible activity. And if in most every community that I'm familiar with, that we've worked with, this information is of record in one place or another in the community. It's a matter of pulling it together. Most of the time, you don't need anybody from the outside to do it, even in a medium-sized, smaller-sized community. If somebody does need help with it, provided the information is available, it should be less than $1,000. It's okay.
Okay. So we had a lot of discussion on different things that we'd like to see change within 18. You able to recap that?
Yeah, sure. So I guess, let me...
So I'm not.
Okay, so the first one, just going, I guess, page by page, the first page that I heard changes need to be made to were... page 5. Mr. Harrigan has made a comment about what the Joint Review Board is supposed to look at, and instead of looking at effectiveness, they need to change, we need to change that term to performance.
That's a word change.
So that's on page 8, sorry.
Okay.
The second change that we talked about was whether or not DOR, we should be requiring municipalities to file reports to DOR, and I think that there was, it felt like the committee wanted to leave that in there. The next thing was regarding the auditing requirement, that if the municipality didn't file in time, didn't request an extension, the bill draft should be changed to allow DOR to request an audit of another, I guess, a contracted agency, and that money should be paid for by the municipality, sorry, that cost should be paid for by the municipality, and if the municipality doesn't pay, then their state aids are reduced. Is that wrong? Is that right?
I think we had three options on the table.
Yeah, we talked about different options. I think the one that we may have gravitated towards was that the DOR wouldn't certify their increment. Right.
That is the one we kind of grabbed. Now I'm just, as I think about it, I think that maybe your suggestion about a penalty, but maybe like $50, something that gives the committee, whoever's going to be considering in the legislature, at least something to start with without making it too complicated, maybe just the penalty, daily penalties.
Well,
I don't know.
Illinois does both. Illinois requires an audit, and then they have a penalty. Okay, so then we do a penalty, and the penalty being either a daily fine... Or certifying the increments?
Certifying the increment punishes them for a whole year and all their taxpayers, right? If they don't certify the increment?
They can't certify it until they send in their reports. I suppose they can certify it once the reports are right.
What's the window for certification? I just wanted to make sure that wasn't going to be like a whole year.
I could amend the draft to do whatever you want. So if you want it to be that they just certify as soon as the report gets filed...
I just wouldn't want to put regular residents at risk of having their tax bills come out late or something.
We got somebody from Fiscal Bureau here who might be able to help us.
Yeah.
Correct. For your input. Representative?
That being said, I think that the suggestion of $100 a day certainly should be enough to encourage people to get to that level.
Sounds good to me. It's a big enough number to scare them. If you put $10 a day, they'll just say $10 a day. Who cares? But $100 a day may mean something. So is everybody okay with that? We'll come back to that in a formal amendment.
Okay, so I'll take out the auditing portion and I'll put in fine structure of $100 per day. I'll change the date to July 31st.
We need to talk about that. So I think what he's saying is that if we change from the May 1st time frame, we're getting to the point where DOR is going to have less time to certify these things and get tax rolls rolled up. I guess is there a sweet spot? Could we have like a June 15th?
But I don't see where the reporting here to the JRB has anything to do with what the DOR is doing.
If you take out the penalty,
yeah,
a fine per day,
right,
then
to certify
fine.
So the 31st day would then work?
Yeah.
Okay, so we don't have to monkey with the 31st. Okay, thank you.
Yes. Okay. So I see three changes. Changing the date, changing the term of effectiveness to performance, and requiring $100
day penalty.
And then I guess the fifth thing would...
Or fourth thing then would be the integration of that 37 draft, just from Melissa's...
Yes, integrating...
From our perspective in terms of our to-do list.
The town.
Right. You guys already voted on...
Right.
So those items, and I'll take a stab at this, I'm thinking we're all on the same page here. So what I would do is put that into a, someone needs to make an amendment, and I would like to roll all of those items up into one amendment. The vote on that one amendment will encapsulate that within the content of what we have here today.
Well,
so go ahead.
For that matter, getting back to Representative Lautenbach's question earlier, right now 18/P2 does not apply to an industry-specific town TID, nor does it apply to an environmental remediation TID. So one of my last questions was going to be, apply across the board to any TID, not just, okay.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Questions. Is there, if we change the date to July 31st, is there still an extension process in that?
I believe so, right?
Okay.
You can ask for an extension beyond the 31st.
Okay. And then the second point is, with this joint review board meeting, this annual meeting, is there any publication requirement? Or should there be? Like we have with the other joint review board meetings.
I did not include that in there. I certainly could.
I don't see it. Just to do a regular 24-hour notice would be sufficient, wouldn't it? You want a publication?
I mean, that's what would be required under public meeting laws.
Yeah.
Right. Open meeting laws.
That's what would require no change.
Unless you want it to be in the newspaper, and then, of course, we have to amend the law.
Mr. Chair, I I'll ask our partners here, but why do we need to put an extension if we're taking it from May 1st all the way to July 31st? I mean, what's the reason for that?
Well, one of the things that July 31st, you'd think everybody has got their audits done by then, but they don't. Maybe some of our finance directors here can weigh in on that. It's a date by which you'd like to be able to have all of the data, but it's particularly smaller communities, I know that it's not coming in until sometimes even September.
Hal, you want to jump in?
Yeah. I mean, for our community, I've never had a problem with the May 1st deadline. I mean, we can get that information in. It's ready. That is not audited information. I mean, if you're talking about final audited information, I think that's problematic then for municipalities as well as their auditors. I don't know if there's enough auditors around to get these all done by that date, but we're talking about pre-audited financial information and filing that in these reports. I don't see a problem with May 1st date.
I have some communities that their audit is finished up in October. It's just there's maybe a shortage of auditors out there, and maybe this is an economic development opportunity.
Well, on that note then, so right now the bill draft, it's drafted so that if the annual report is not timely filed, DOR has to notify the municipality. And if then it gives them a 60-day window before, an audit would have to be required. So I could retain some of that language so that the municipality receives notice that they haven't complied, and then they have a 60-day window before the $100 a day fine kicks in.
Good? No good?
I thought we got rid of the audit.
We did.
Okay.
I'm just explaining what the bill draft did. Because the bill draft had this gap right now,
okay.
And I don't know if we still want the gap.
So
that's
the audit
that's the question.
Language comes up with the 60-day... You have 60 days to get it in before you start getting penalized. So essentially it takes us from July 31st to September 30th. I mean, somebody better give me a darn good reason why you can't have it done by then, I'll tell you. Okay. You got that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So those are the changes that we have. Why don't we just recap them one more time so everybody's comfortable with taking a vote?
All right, so that would be to approve the 18/P2 draft with the amendments to include the change from effectiveness to performance on page 8 to specify a $100 a day fine if the report is not timely filed or if it's not filed within the extension period, to change the report deadline from May 1st to July 31st, and to generally apply the provisions of the bill to town and environmental remediation TIDs, thereby also combining it with the WLC 0037 concepts of a general concept of aligning town and city-village reporting.
Okay. So having said that, we've got an amendment in front of us. Is there somebody who would like to formally move on the amendment?
Move
adoption of the amendment. Do we have a second?
Oh, wait.
Wait.
We also have a developer's agreement.
Right.
So
that was just
Oh, yeah. Just on page
three. We talked about the developer agreement.
Page 6, line 3.
Right.
Instead of
change that language, correct.
Yeah.
Does everybody recall that conversation? Okay, good. So do we still have a motion to move the amendment? Do we have a second to move the amendment? Do we have a motion and a second? Want to take roll on that or should we just?
I will take the roll.
Let's take roll.
Senator Goodix.
Aye.
Representative Lautenbeck.
Aye.
Senator Jow. Representative Kugelich.
Aye.
Representative Onstead.
Aye.
Representative Zepnik.
Aye.
Ms. Andrews.
Aye.
Mr. Harrigan.
Yes.
Ms. Kelly.
Aye.
Mr. Pavari. Mr. Lincoln. Mr. Rasmussen.
Aye.
Mr. Reichel. Mr. Sirk, Mr. Slavish, Mr. Thillman,
aye.
Mr. Wilson, Mr. Wartman.
Okay, so now we're back to the original bill, which is the 18/ the combined bill. Do we have any further discussion on that, or are we ready to take a vote with the amendments? All right, let's take roll on that.
Senator Goodix.
Aye.
Representative Lautenbeck.
Aye.
Senator Jow. Representative Kugelich.
Aye.
Representative Onstead.
Aye.
Representative Zepnik.
Aye.
Ms. Andrews. Mr. Harrigan.
Aye.
Ms. Kelly.
Aye.
Mr. Kovari. Mr. Lincoln. Mr. Rasmussen.
No.
Mr. Reichel. Mr. Sirk. Mr. Slavish. Mr. Thillman.
Aye.
Mr. Wilson. Mr. Wartman.
Passes.
Passes.
Passes 11-1. Okay, why don't we do this? Let's break for lunch. Why don't we all plan our meeting back here a little after 1 o'clock and we'll pick up where we're at here. So appreciate it. We'll see you a little after 1 o'clock.